Hi, everybody, and welcome to El Camino People, the podcast. Today, we have one of our longest friends, and like we started our friendship a long time ago over Instagram, and it's incredible how finally we get to meet and to share stories. Hi, Marlies, and thanks to be here. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm great. How are you? I'm so happy to be here.
It is so funny because I never knew your name, and like for me, you are X-Nan on the run. Like forever, I put that name with your face and it's like, finally, I know your name. It's so weird how sometimes, you know, we put 2+2 on Instagram and we've seen each other and it's just finally that, you know, the Camino puts you here and here we are.
I know, it's great. I love that. I love that. That's one of my favorite things about the Camino, or the people that you encounter and meet during the Camino and even long after. You know, it's been two years since my Camino. I'm still meeting random people who either walked it or walked the same time I did, etc. It's great. Yeah.
But that's the whole thing of the Camino. You know, I ask a lot of people, it's like, when do you start walking your Camino? And I always said, you know, it's not the first day that you walk, it's when you start preparing what you know. And yeah. I always say, you never stop walking, because like, no. You haven't walked for 2 years, but you meet people from the Camino, you talk about the Camino, and that's still Camino.
Yeah, it becomes an instant bond, you know, when somebody says, oh, I walked the Camino, or I'm thinking of walking the Camino, you're like, yes, do it, go walk it, you know.
Yeah, you became one of those weirdos that every time you hear the Camino war, it's like, oh yeah, I did it, what are you going, which Camino?
Two years later, I'm still talking about it like I just did it.
And it's incredible, all those memories came back to you, it's just amazing.
Or memories that, you know, maybe weren't as prominent before or more now. Yeah.
Yeah, that's one of the things that, you know, for me with a lot of interviews, when I start thinking, you know, and talking with you, pilgrims from all over the world, like these, you know, little things pop up and you're like, wow, I didn't think about that day, or I didn't think about that after the Camino. But yeah, the Camino's, I'm like, you are so overwhelmed by so many different things that sometimes it's just impossible to go through all of them in such a little period of time.
Yeah, no, I know. It's so great. It's such a gift.
Totally. Yeah. We are the lucky ones that can, you know, that are able to walk. Anyway, sure. Before we go into the 1 minute questionnaire, I want to remember everyone that, you know, all these serious, like, please guys, subscribe to our videos and like it and share. Most of the things, I don't care if you like, I don't care if you subscribe, but share with your friends. You know, I don't care about likes, subscribe, whatever, but I will tell you when we have a new video, a new interview, but just share with the people. You know, that's the whole thing of the Camino. We can spread the beauty of the Camino to each one, 10, you know, friends, family, whatever, and we can get them to walk. And like, can you imagine how great the walk can be? We just have a little piece of Camino in everybody's mind and heart.
Yes, I always tell people, if you want peace in the world, go walk the Camino.
Yeah, I always think, I'm like, we should bring all the politicians, important people into the Camino, put them there together and, you know, make them figure out a way to do a communal dinner, find an albergue and help someone.
Yeah, seriously, that really, I think, would solve a lot of our problems.
Totally. So the ones hearing, remember, you have to share the Camino today with at least 10 people. That's your good deed for today.
Okay.
Anyway, let's go with the 1 minute questionnaire. Remember, whatever comes to your mind, just quick and easy. Don't overthink it. Are you ready?
Okay.
Let's
go. I'm ready.
Your first Camino.
May of 2019.
Your favorite private hostel.
It was probably in Pamplona. I don't remember the name of it, but it was the albergue I stayed in Pamplona, funnily enough.
Okay. One meal.
Gosh, the pilgrim meal.
A memory.
Wine. A memory. Meeting my Camino family, the two friars and a deacon.
A song.
Oh, I don't remember the name of it, but there was a group of Irish people who were singing in one of the plazas. El Camino. It was actually like El Camino People was the name of the song.
I will have to reserve that. One
I'll
color.
Have to send it to you on Instagram and you can post it.
One color.
Pink.
A sad moment.
Oh, this woman, as we were going down the Pyrenees, she broke her leg. So her Camino ended right then and there. And, you know, she had to be I think a helicopter had to come get her or something. Yep. I just remember being devastated for her because it was towards the beginning also. But hopefully maybe someday she can return and do it.
Sometimes the Camino have strange ways, you know, and sometimes it's not the time to do the Camino. But I always remember, like, last, you know, this summer I was telling you before the interview, like, I walked from Lourdes to Pamplona and And I saw someone, you know, going over the Pyrenees with just flip-flops and a little backpack with nothing, no clothing. I'm like, remember, guys, that those are the Pyrenees and they're hard and they can get, you know, rainy and cloudy and foggy in just about a minute. So if you're not really used to hike, just be careful and be prepared.
Especially that those days, you know, maybe on the Mitsata that might be fine, but not
No,
on the
during.
Pyrenees.
No, until July, and you better be careful. I'm like, everything can happen there. And you're walking in May, there is still the snow, there's still a lot of danger over there.
For sure. But you know, sometimes even with that, I remember thinking that was her, like, I hate that that happened to her, but maybe like her Camino wasn't supposed to go all the way to Santiago.
That's what I always
You
say, you
know,
know,
you just
sometimes
never
the
know.
Camino. Yeah, never know, and never know what will happen next. Maybe she came back and find, you know, whatever she was looking for or whatever, but sometimes it's just hard. But we have to remember that some people die on that climb. And it's not the first time that happened, you know, sometimes because they lost, sometimes because of health issues, but it is a tricky place. And during the winter, remember, you are not supposed to go over the pass. You are supposed to go to take the other route, and that's mandatory for every pilgrim because also you exposed, you know, the people that are supposed to rescue you that have to go there and rescue you. So anyway, my first question to everyone, when and how did the Camino appear into your life? I'm like, for the ones that don't know, you were a nun, but was this prior when you were a child? Did you know about the Camino all your life?
So the Camino first came up in my life when I was in high school.
Wow.
A teacher in my high school walked the Camino, and I remember when she was preparing to walk the Camino, because she told us, you know, her students, she was a religion teacher. I went to a Catholic high school, and she taught theology. And I remember her mentioning, "I'm going to be walking the Camino this summer." And I thought, you know, none of us knew what the Camino was. And she told us about how it's this ancient pilgrim route of St. James to the tomb of St. James in Spain. And at the time, I remember thinking, oh, that's nice, but it wasn't like I want to do that too someday, you know? And then I remember the following fall when she came back and I asked her how the Camino was, and she talked about how she loved it, this and that, but she was saying how she got all these blisters and, you know, the difficult parts too. And I thought, what do you mean you loved it if you had all this suffering with blisters and bed bugs and all you did was walk every day? And she said, you know, you'll understand if someday you walk, if it's, you meet these people and it's just life changing. And I thought, well, that's fine. You know, everybody has their thing and that's her thing. And then, you know, fast forward to several years, I entered the convent. I was a nun for 8 years. And in the convent, I would meet pilgrims here and there who had walked the Camino and always had beautiful things to say about it. And I've always enjoyed hiking, but I've never been like one of those super outdoorsy people. So I thought, you know, that'd be nice to do, but I knew as a sister that probably wasn't going to happen. And then I remember one evening in the convent, we watched the movie The Way. It was around whenever it first came out. It was pretty new still, and I just was like, that's incredible. That's probably when my like that would be so neat to do it someday, but that'll never happen. So I'll just pray for pilgrims
To keep
who are on it
coming.
now and coming and going. So really, that was when kind of my interest for the Camino started. But it wasn't until I discerned that religious life wasn't for me. And I was kind of in this place of, what do I do with myself? You know, I had been a nun for my entire adult life at that point. I entered very young, and just didn't know how to be an adult in the world. You know, I left college. I didn't even graduate from college because I went from college to the convent. So I had really not had any experience of being an adult in the world where I had, you know, I didn't even have a bank account. I had no resume. I didn't have any. I worked as a sister, but I never had any kind of job as a regular person, as a layperson. And so I was just kind of in this state of shock of, what do I do with my life?
For the ones I don't
And
know, because you know, for me it's kind of like close. I have friends that went into nuns and some of them come out and tell us, you know, what does it mean? You know, you were in college and suddenly you went into became a nun?
Yeah.
What, so you were always, on a closer space, or you were one of those nuns that can go in and out? What would you do as a nun on your...
That's a great question. Thanks. So I have grew up in a pretty devout Catholic family.
Mm-hmm.
I've always, you know, loved my faith and wanted to give of my life to God. And for a long time, since childhood, thought about religious life, thought about going into the convent. And I knew that the only way to really discern that is if you actually enter. You know, you can only think about it and pray about it for so long outside in the world. But to really know if it's what God is calling you to do, you need to enter a convent or monastery.
Mm-hmm.
And the church is so wise in that, you know, there are so many steps you take and so many years before you are like fully a nun. So it's mm-hmm. almost 10 years until you take final vows. And so I wasn't in final vows yet when I discerned that it wasn't for me. I, you know, still I'm very close with the community, but it just wasn't where my heart felt happy. Mm-hmm. Like I wasn't fulfilled in a way that I thought I would be. I was still kind of like, I just wasn't happy, you know? And so I discerned that it wasn't for me. And, but when I entered, you know, I was in college when I was discerning and really felt called like I need to enter now. I didn't think I needed to graduate because mm-hmm. I thought I don't want to put God on hold. Yeah. I wanted to enter, you know, like when like the scriptures say when God called, you know, when Jesus called Peter and Andrew and the apostles, they left everything immediately to follow him. And so that's very much what I felt too. You know, if Jesus is calling me, I'm going to leave everything immediately mm-hmm. to follow him when he calls. And I met the community that I entered with in college. There was like a poster of theirs. I went to a Catholic university. There was a poster of theirs on campus and I wrote to them and I visited other sisters too, other different congregations. And but when I met the congregation that I ended up joining, it was like an instant feeling of like that was home. And mm-hmm. I felt very much like I was able to be myself right away. And so I dropped out of college. I would joke about how I was a college dropout for Jesus. dropped out of college to become a sister. And yeah, so that was how that happened. But like I said, I, you know, 8 years into the life, I just knew that that wasn't maybe where God was calling me. And so mm-hmm. again, making that decision of, okay, like I'm always in trust, you know, of like, okay, Lord, if I'm not supposed to be here, then I'm going to leave, but I don't know what I'm going to do with myself. And so then I did discern out and it was a heartbreaking decision. It was very difficult because mm-hmm. I was, you know, sad to leave this life that I had been living for 8 years, but also this fear of what now, what's out there.
What's waiting on the other side, no?
Yeah, yeah.
Because what would you do on a normal day, like, you know, as a nun, a lot of people will think, what do a nun in New York, what will be your everyday
life? So my everyday, we woke up every day at 4:30 in the morning.
Holy moly, earlier than the pilgrim. So that wasn't
very early, yeah.
A problem from you waking up early in the Camino.
No, that I still very much to this day still love mornings. Yeah. I've always been kind of more of a morning person anyway, but that's 4:30 is very early.
That's night.
That's very early. It's still dark, you know. So we would get up every day at 4:30 because prayers were at 5 a.m.
Yeah.
And we prayed the Liturgy of the Hours, which are mm-hmm. just psalms that are set for each day. Each day there's different psalms. And different parts of the day there are different psalms
mm-hmm.
that we would chant. And so we had prayers at 5, morning prayers at 5. And then following that, we had silent meditation at 5:30 for 30 minutes. And then after meditation, we had mass. And then after mass, we had breakfast in silence. So, which I joke about how like it was a grace because we're still pretty grouchy at that time. At that time, that it's best we not talk to each other.
I can imagine really every day at 4:30 and after,
you know,
so
you're
long
so tired.
Praying, I'm like, yeah.
Really, it was a beautiful way to kind of reflect on the mass
uh-huh.
And get, you know, just kind of prepare ourselves for the day. And then after mm-hmm. breakfast, we went off to work. And so I was in an active community, meaning it was an active contemplative community, meaning we had, you know, several hours of prayer a day.
Mm-hmm.
But then we had work outside of the convent. So the sisters in my congregation were, we did different types of work, as it, you know, whether it was in education or healthcare, mm-hmm. or worked directly for the church, which is what I did. I worked at the Vatican, and yeah, just different, wherever the church needed us, we were. So our charism, which is every community has their own kind of special charism. It's a gift of the Holy Spirit. Mm-hmm. Our charism was to make Christ's merciful love visible. And so really, you know, anywhere we were called or asked to work, that was, we did it. So there wasn't just, you know, how some orders are only teachers or some are only
Yeah.
And then we would work in the morning. And then depending on what your work was, if you were able to come back at lunchtime, then we would have midday prayers and mm-hmm. then lunchtime. And then after lunch, back to work. And then in the evening, we would come back in the evening and have evening prayer, supper. And then after supper, it was different, whether it was recreation, so really time for us to just hang out, be with each other, or have Bible study, or just different. It was different every evening.
Mm-hmm.
And then we would have night prayer at the very end, at, you know, before bed.
What time did you go to bed?
Usually, so I actually, as a sister, I ended up going back to school. My congregation sent me back to finish my degree, which was a great gift. So I would go to bed pretty late because I was, you know, up doing homework. But typically, the sisters went to bed around 9:30.
Okay, right. If you wake up at 4:30, I'm like, you need...
Yeah. And then there were some evening on Friday nights when we would get up in the middle of the night to have adoration.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that was, so my preferred hour is 1 a.m. because then I could kind of nap and then mm-hmm. get up for my holy hour and then go back and take another nap before prayer, before 4:30. Yeah.
So then after all of that, suddenly you decide that that wasn't the life, you know, that God had planned for you, that there's something else outside. But when did the Camino, because I guess, you know, probably the last year was thinking, you know, as you were saying before, you know, what do I do now? How I do get out? And as you were saying, I'm like, no, not a bank account, nor a CV, not even or LinkedIn, not even your probably your friends from everywhere, all over the world. You also, as you say, you were working in the Vatican. So for you coming back to the States, I'm like, when did the Camino pop out again in all that huge, humongous thoughts that were all going around in your head?
So the Camino, this is just how God works differently in people's lives, you know, but in my life, he's always very much very kind of spontaneous
and funny.
And so, and very just sense of humor of like, just taking me and somehow I'm able to say, yes, okay, I'll go wherever you want, Lord. But I left the convent in March and it was maybe my first week of being back home. I remember I was here at my mom's, staying at my mom's, and talking to a friend who had also had a similar experience. He was in seminary, so he was training to be a priest and discerned that that wasn't for him. And so he really was just such a pillar. His friendship for me was just such a pillar of support at the time. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, maybe now you can do things that you never would have been able to do as a sister. You know, he's like, you should write up a list of things you can do now that you would never have been able to do as a sister. So I remember taking my phone out and, you know, opening the notes app and starting this list. And for whatever reason, I don't know how it came into my head, but for some reason, the first thing I wrote on the list was walk the Camino.
The first one, really, that was the first thing that came out to you, because, you know, if I'm thinking about living your life as a nun and becoming a normal person will be start a family, having a baby, I don't know, things like more. But the first one was the Camino.
The first thing. And, you know, I still don't know to this day what the idea was or where, how it even came up in my mind. But for some reason, that was what I wrote down. And I thought, I have no money, you know, because you take a vow of poverty as a sister.
Yeah, and of course, so the money is just from the whole, you know, if you have, for people that don't know, you don't have a salary. You, whatever you want to expend, you ask the mother or whatever is in charge of the money in the convent, and they will buy it for you if it's needed. But that's the thing, you apply to poverty.
Yes, exactly. So we took three vows and one of them is poverty. And so, yes, I had no salary. I had no, like I said, I had no bank account. So I thought, you know, I don't have money to pay for this. I didn't want to ask my family.
Yeah.
you know, to buy me a plane ticket, all this money for gear. And this is, again, how God works. So I got a phone call from this man who I knew as a sister. And he said, you know, I think it would be great if you did something like the Camino. And I was just shocked. I was like, how does he know? You know, I hadn't talked to, I talked to him because he knew that I, you know, I left the convent. I, you know, I told the people that I knew. I was living in St. Louis, Missouri as a sister at the time. Mm-hmm. And he called and he said, you know, you should walk the Camino. Have you heard of it? Do you know what that is? And I said, do I know what that is? You know? And I said, you know, I don't think it's a good time. I just need to kind of get my life settled. And he said, I'll pay for you to go.
Wow.
And I just thought, I can't accept, like, what a great gift. I remember telling him, like, thank you so much. That's such a great gift, but I can't accept that, you know? So initially I didn't accept it. And I guess he must have told a priest that we mutually knew in St. Louis. And the priest called me and he said, you have to accept this offer.
Wow.
Because when will you ever get this kind of opportunity again? And so I did. And so that man, he paid for my plane tickets. At the time I was able, you know, in between time, I was able to find a job. So I was working and saving all my money for the Camino, but he paid for a majority of it. And even throughout the walk, I would just, you know, check my phone and I'd get like a random, I guess, donation from him, you know, for your Camino. And to this day, I mean, I wouldn't have been able to do it without his kindness and generosity. And so that was in March, and then I began walking in May. So that's really incredible. 2 months later was along the way. But from the time I really thought about walking the Camino, it was like 3 weeks. Like I had 3 weeks from the time I said, I'm going to do this. And then when I went to Lourdes was when Lourdes is where I started. So
what were your friends, your family? Then I bet probably you have still contact with the nuns at the time. So what would people thinking? Like suddenly you go from living, you know, in the Vatican, living in with your community. Suddenly you get out, you go back to your mom's house, and suddenly there you are walking to Santiago.
Yeah, my mom and my family was pretty, especially my mother. I think she was just kind of shocked with first of all that I left the convent. You know, all my friends and family were like, what happened? You know, you were so like happy there, and I just said it wasn't for me. And even the sisters were like, what is she doing? And because at the time, you know, and I'm still kind of this way, but I'm very much like I like to plan things. I'm not really spontaneous or adventurous, or that's just not kind of where I fall on this spectrum of what, you know, personality, whatever you want to call it. And so for me to just say, I'm going to go do this and I'm going to do it by myself. And I'm not really planning where I'm going or what I'm, you know, where I'm staying in advance. I'm just going to walk. And when I get tired, I'll stop and find an albergue. Like I didn't have any kind of set route of how I was going to do it or end date of when I needed to arrive in Santiago. Like I was just leaving it up to Providence. And so for so many of my family and friends, it was very much a shock. It was just a shock for me too, you know, like going from such a scheduled life, you know, from the moment I woke up until the moment I went to sleep, every hour of my life was planned to now just being like, yeah, I'm going to go on this, you know, also, in a way,
your whole life was planned and you were jumping into a no plan and like you went for,
Yeah. And I'd never, like I mentioned, I never traveled solo before. So again, it was just kind of, and you know, of course I was afraid and nervous and anxious about it. But at the same time, there was always this piece of feeling like I was doing what I was supposed to be doing. Yeah.
And suddenly here you are planning, you have finally the ticket, but your ticket, your plan was to start walking from Shenzhen. So you traveled to Spain. What did you do?
So I flew from New York to Madrid and then Madrid to San Sebastian.
Okay.
Because I wanted to go to Loyola.
Why Loyola? I'm like, a lot of people, they don't know. And, you know, for me, I'm from a Jesuit school, so it's a big place. And right now there's also has his own Camino, the Camino of San Ignatius.
That
goes from Loyola to
there.
Montserrat. So that's it's on my book list and it must be beautiful. But for you, why Loyola?
So I went to a Jesuit school.
Yes.
Yeah, I went to Jesuit school, and it was that man who helped to pay for my Camino. I met him at that Jesuit school.
Okay.
And so the Jesuits and St. Ignatius have, do have like a part in my life in some way. And he was who suggested it.
So
His name was Paul. He said, you should go to Loyola. Again, he was like, it's close-ish to St.
yeah,
John, it's not too
and it
far.
is in a way it is much closer than the next place you went.
And then he said, and while you're at it, you should just stop in Lourdes. And I love Mary. I've always had a devotion to the Blessed Virgin Mary. And so I wouldn't have even known that St. John and Lourdes were somewhat close to each other.
Well, for the
And
ones that don't know, the map of France on a train is close by walking is about 8 days walking,
eight
okay?
days walking, yes. So I had planned, I wanted to walk the Camino Frances because it was what I'd heard most
Yeah.
about. I heard it was the official UNESCO, World Heritage UNESCO recognized one. And I thought, even though I'm by myself, it would be nice to see people here and there. And so I went to Lourdes, and it was in Lourdes that I heard snippets of the Camino can be started from here. And so I went to the tourism office in Lourdes and asked them if it was possible. And they said, yeah, some people do that. And they gave me the maps. They stamped my Compostela
And
with the
there you
Camino,
go.
the Lourdes stamp. And then I filled my water bottle up, like I said to you earlier, filled my water bottle up with the water from the grotto and Lourdes and started walking. And it was beautiful, but it was 8 days. I think from Lourdes to Saint Jean, it was 8 days. And I was by myself for all of it, but it was
And for the
very
ones that,
inspiring.
the people, so many times they think that the Camino is like all like the French Camino from Saint-Jean, like you have a huge amount of albergues, huge amount of
No.
people, super easy to go. But really, once you cross the Pyrenees or France, there is many different ways. The one of them, one a lot, some of them really walk and with many pilgrims. But the one from Luke is called the Camino Piamonte,
Yeah.
and it is hard to follow. There's not that many arrows. There's not many
Right.
people. There's not many albergues. There's no stores, no bars, no
No.
cafes. And it's really like a hiking. Some days you have to go through, like, you have the option to go on the road or on a medium path or go through the mountains. But I'm like,
Yeah.
as we were saying, I walked it this year and I was by myself also. Beautiful,
Yeah,
amazing. But.
it's very remote. And I think I mentioned to you earlier, I'm not a major hiker, So I was like, I enjoy hiking, but I'm not super outdoorsy. And so it
So,
was
how
really
were.
kind of like a baptism by fire for me.
Totally. So how was that first, for and like you arrived to Luke, that's a pilgrimage place. You have the huge, church over there, the experience, but
Yeah.
suddenly you feel the call that I need to start walking.
Yeah.
How
It was,
was the becoming a pilgrim, like suddenly?
it was both very difficult because it was a shock of what am I doing? What did I get myself into? Just like physical exhaustion, of
Like,
carrying this
do you
pack.
speak French?
I speak no French.
Okay, because that's
So it
another
was just,
issue. Like a lot of people over there, the English is not, you speak to a
no,
younger
so it
person,
was,
yeah, but
I mean, I don't know if the like people that I met at the places I stayed just felt bad for me. I must have looked horrible every time I came. I was alone. But they were always so kind, and even though I spoke no English and or I they spoke no English, I spoke no French, somehow we could communicate with my phone. I'd use a translator on my phone, and it was even later, it was I think after Pamplona, I met a French couple at one of the albergues I stayed in, and they were just hiking. They weren't walking the Camino
Okay.
either. And I met them later, like gosh, like weeks later somewhere. I don't even remember where. And it was just such a happy reunion. Again, I don't speak French. They spoke no English, but they had remembered who I was from earlier, so that was difficult, was just getting my body acclimated to the hiking with this. My pack was probably heavier than it should have been. And but at the same time, I was just so moved by the like natural beauty around me because I had never been to France before or hiked the mountains of France. So I was just so like in awe of like just constant awe. I remember some days I would just like look up and just cry because it's so just physically beautiful, you know, naturally beautiful. Yeah. Especially once you reach the Pyrenees too, you know, like from Saint-Jean to Roncesvalles. I mean, I would just stop. Probably it's why it took me like 14 hours to cross that mountain because I would just cry. I was just so beautiful. And, you know, my heart, I was like going through just sorting a lot of what had been happening in my heart that I probably hadn't dealt with in the last 8 years of religious life. So, yeah, it was just very physically exhausting, but just so beautiful and moving. And I, looking back, if I had to choose a stage to redo on the Camino and I could only pick that stage, it would be that.
It is incredible because a lot of people ask, you know, where to start the Camino. And I always say, if you have the time, even if you're not really fit, you need to start in Saint-Jean because it changed the whole meaning of going up that mountain and going down. I don't know why, but it changed everything. And as you say before, with you walking 8 days to arrive to that moment, that's even better.
Yes, I would say, if I could, people always ask me, you know, what was your favorite part of the Camino? Or like, if you could redo a stage, which would it be? I would say it would be from Lourdes to Pamplona. Those days were probably just so beautiful.
And when we were talking about your first experience with the finding the Camino, we missed something. I know that something happened with your brother.
Oh, yes. So that was another thing. He had gone to the Philippines for a trip and had, you know, brought a bunch of shells home. And so he randomly handed me the scallop shell. And again, it was around when I had decided, you know, I thought, oh, I'd like to do the Camino. I'd written it as the first thing on that bucket list. And I was like, why are you giving this to me? And he said, oh, I just wanted to. And I was like, little did he know that that's the symbol for the Camino, you know. And it was just a few days after that I received the phone call from that man who was wanting to pay for my trip.
It is just incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. So these little tangible signs, which, you know, I probably need because I'm like so wanting, it's hard for me to just come out of myself and decide to do something like this and not kind of doubt or question if it's what I'm supposed to be doing or if it's irresponsible, you know, because I had to quit my job to walk it to, you know, to have
something that you just started
over a month of walking. I have to quit my job. So
anyway, it was what you were supposed to do, no? Sometimes we have to listen to the signs. So tell us, a lot of people, you know, when we go on the Camino, the first question a lot of people is like, what do you do? Where do you come from? Like, with you, I'm like, you had those first days with no one, but once you arrived to Saint-Jean, I'm like, people were like, oh, okay, you came from Luth. And what was the reaction when you tell them your story?
People are always so surprised, you know, because the whole being an ex-nun thing is just a shocker for so many people because how many young women do you meet that
they're ex-nuns,
were in the convent and then left the convent, etc. And and then when I would tell them I walked the Camino and that was a question, like you said, people always ask, oh, where did you start? Or how many days have you been walking, etc. And so I'd say, oh, I started in Lourdes. And they're like, wow, you've been doing this a long time. Because by the time I got to Santiago de Compostela, I mean, it was probably like close to, I would take some breaks, you know, some days of rest, but it was
40 something days at least.
Yeah, 40 days. And then I kept walking, even after Santiago, I kept walking to Muxia and Finisterre. So total, I mean, I think I walked close to 50 days or something. I wasn't the type of person that was counting every day. But and people are like, how did you do it? I was like, it was grace. It was by grace alone.
And how people react, because, you know, one of the things that surprises, like when you left the, you know, the non-life, people will think that maybe you will be pissed with God or something. But in your case, it's totally the opposite. It was just, you wasn't meant called to that. But when you explain that to pilgrims, that sometimes probably some of them weren't being religious, or how do the people react to that?
Well, one of the beautiful things about the Camino is it's not just for Catholics, even though it's a Catholic pilgrimage, you know, to the tomb of an apostle, St. James. There are people of all walks of life, right? And people with religion, either Christian or all different religions or no religion at all. And so when that's exactly that, they would think, oh, you must hate the church now, or you must, are you not Catholic anymore? And I would say, no, I'm still very much Catholic, and I still love the church, and I'm doing this as a pilgrimage. And people would ask why I was doing this. I always wanted them to know that I was for spiritual reasons as a pilgrimage. Mm-hmm. And really one of the things that drew me to the Camino to do it was I really wanted to offer that time as a thanksgiving for my time in the convent. Even though I discerned that it wasn't for me, I wanted to offer those days of walking as a thanksgiving to God for the grace of having had the experience of religious life. And then to also ask him, you know, to show me where to go next.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I would tell them that, people were always so like moved by it. And then to be able to share in many ways my Catholic faith and, you know, why the process of being a nun, you know, how mm-hmm. it's not just you enter and then you're officially a sister. It's yeah. a, you know, many steps until you're fully a sister. And then just to share the joy and love I have for the church and for Jesus, really, and to show them that, like, any, you know, it's not, there's not one picture stereotype of a person,
mm-hmm.
the type of person that goes into a convent yeah. and then leaves. But yeah, I was always one of shock. People were always so surprised and so shocked and like had so many questions, which I'm always happy to answer. I'm happy to share. And then it became even more shocking when I began walking with the Franciscan friars that I met.
You know, when I read and I remember these pictures in my mind, because for so many people, you know, I don't know why, you know, when they think about a priest or a father walking the Camino, some of them, you know, you work in plain clothes, but some others they do with their normal habit. And I remember when I first walked my first Camino, I saw this guy, I think he was Polish. And when he was walking, he will be walking, you know, with the garments with the old style.
Yeah.
And then when he will arrive into town, he will put a normal t-shirt, a shorts, and I asked him one day, like, why do you do that? Like, when I walk in the Camino, that's my day job. I'm like, I'm a priest. I want people to approach
and whatever.
But when I arrived to the albergue, I'm just, you know, normal pilgrim and I put on my clothes. And it was kind of funny because he was young. And when I saw the picture, you know, of you, I remember always the picture of you arriving to Santiago with the two. It's just funny. And also for you, I'm like, you, and as your name says, ex-nun on the run. I'm like, on the run usually implies I'm running from something. But in your case, you were running for something, but the Camino had something waiting for you. So what happened? When did it happen? And how was it?
So when I was, you know, I was walking and I'm, to be completely honest, even though I still very much was like, love the church and love Jesus and wasn't going to stop being Catholic, there was a sense of like hurt there, you know, mm-hmm. from experiences in the convent that I needed healing from and that I was avoiding. I wasn't even wanting to think about it or pray about it. I was just like wanting to avoid it altogether. But God in his mysterious ways knew that I needed to deal with it. And so I was in, right before you reach Castro Jerez, there are these ruins, you know, the San Anton ruins,
San Anton.
I think they're called. So,
mm-hmm.
There was like a man with a little bar, you know, the little bars like on the side of the road, and he had watermelon and drinks and things. And so I had stopped there for a slice of watermelon and I was sitting talking. I'd met, you know, there were other pilgrims there and I was just chatting with them. And at that point, funnily enough, I had not met any Americans. I met people from all over Europe, all over Asia, whatever, but not really any Americans.
That's strange because that time of the year, I'm like, usually it's people from all over the world.
Right.
Spain,
and I don't know if it was because, right. And I don't know if it was because I was by myself, whatever, mm-hmm. you know, but I hadn't met any Americans. And so I'd said that to one of the pilgrims. I said, you know, it's so funny. I haven't met any Americans really on this trip. Because they had said, there's so many Americans here. And I was like, where? Because I've yet to meet them. And as we're chatting, he goes, they're American. And I turn around and it was the two friars and another man who was with them, who I learned later was a deacon. And I have never booked it so fast in my life. I remember just grabbing my pack and running after them, screaming, friars, friars. And to this day, we still laugh about it because from their perspective, they said how they just remember, you know, I'm pretty short. I'm only 5'2". So they were like, all we saw was this little lady running, yelling, friars. friars, like, from these ruins, you know. And I had recognized their habit, the two friars. They have many friaries here in New York. So I recognized their habit. They're the Franciscan friars of the Renewal. And I said, I know your brothers from back home. I'm from New York City. And so that was how the conversation started. They were like, where are you headed? And I said, oh, Castro Harris is the next town. That's probably where I'll stop for the day. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, that's where we're headed too. And so, you know, we're walking and talking and chatting. It was just so nice to be with other Americans, you know. And I ended up staying in the same albergue as them that evening, not planning on seeing them the next day. I thought I'll just, you know, keep doing my thing. And I remember Father Conrad, one of the friars was a priest. He celebrated Mass in the albergue in the dining room that evening. And other pilgrims came and joined. And I just thought, this is so great, you know. And the next morning, as I was leaving, the other friar, his name is Brother John Bosco, he caught me as I was leaving. He said, oh, are you going already? I said, yeah, I like an early start. You know, like I said, I'm a morning person. I would usually start walking around like 5:30, 6 a.m. Mm-hmm. And he was like, wait for us. We'll walk together. And then we ended up walking together all the way to Santiago de Compostela. And it was really just such a gift for me to be with those three men. You know, they were like middle-aged men, like my dad's age probably. So we were probably quite a sight, I think. You know, these two friars in their habits, their gray Franciscan habits, and then Mark, who looks kind of like a friar because they all have these like big burly beards, you know, and then me. And I remember thinking, I think at one point I finally asked them when we were in Lyon, I was like, are you all okay with me tagging along? You know, like I felt like I don't want to mess with whatever the three of you have going on or, you know, your vibe. And they're like, no, this is great. It's so great having you. And so they really became like I would joke about my three spiritual fathers on this trip. And my mom, I remember calling her at one point. I was like, yeah, I'm with these three men. And they're like, well, at least you're safe.
It is incredible because I'm like, you think about your whole story. I'm like, you're running from the convent, then you go to Lourdes, you find these three men. You know, I was thinking, this is like the three musketeers and D'Artagnan running. I'm like...
And it was just like that experience with the three of them was very healing for me to be with the two friars. You know, I didn't tell them, I didn't tell people right away that I was a
Of course, I'm like, that's, you know, you don't, but how did they react? Because I'm like, once, you know, you walk for them with a couple of days or whatever happened, and suddenly you open to them, you tell them you're.
Yeah. So I told them, I told them separately too. I didn't tell them all at the same time either. I told Brother John Bosco first. We were walking, it was the morning after Castro Harris when we were walking. Mm-hmm. And I remember it was a beautiful day. It was cold, but the sun was rising as we were walking. And he asked me, he was like, so what's your story? What are you know, like what's been going on with you? And I said, well, actually I just left the convent. None of them, it's funny when I told them, the three of them didn't act shocked at all. They were just like, oh, okay. You know, and I'm sure they've met people. Probably more people than the average person would that had also had similar experiences. And so they were very like, they weren't shocked about it at all. But they were always just so supportive of like, you know, you don't need to worry, like God has a plan for you and it'll come to you as you just go about living your life. And really that was probably one of the biggest lessons overall of the Camino is, you don't need to know right away what the next thing is, but just to be present in the moment and to just do what you need to do in that actual moment. So on the Camino, it's just walking. You know, all you're really doing is walking, one foot in front of the other.
That's one of the things that I love from something that I read for you, that you know, a lot of people put the Camino like a fairy tale, no? Like every day is a day. Have this encounter with whatever, you know, and you have like light and you find the reason to be. And you said that no, one day after the other is just walking. And that's the beauty of the Camino. And I love what you just said, that sometimes it's okay not to know what's coming to you. And I think right now we live in a moment, you know, that all these gurus, all these coaches, all these people, they say that you need a plan. And sometimes, you know, it's okay not to have a plan and to be open and to be happy with what you're doing.
Yes, absolutely. And to just be present in that, in the present moment, to actually live in the present moment. I mean, I think especially the past year and a half, 2 years of this pandemic, you know, we've really seen what it is to not be able to go do whatever we want when we want it. So to then to take the opportunities that we are given and to be grateful for each and every moment that we are given, because you don't know when it'll be gone, you know?
Yeah.
And so with the three men that I walked with, that really was just such a great lesson, was because the three of them, to me too, really just embodied living that in the moment, especially when we would have mass every evening. Father wanted to celebrate mass. And so it was always a question of, oh, where are we going to do it? How are we going to do it? You know, and just the most random opportunities would come up. So like, I don't remember where we were, but this tiny little village on the Camino, and we were looking for a place to have mass, and somebody heard our conversation and they were like, oh, we can give you a key to this chapel. And it was like some 14th century stone chapel, you know? And so we got to have mass there, and pilgrims were always so drawn, especially to the true friars, you know, to see them in the habit, I think, is really a witness. Mm-hmm. When you see a priest or religious, you know, brother or sister in a habit, is always just such a witness. And whether you believe or not, there's something that strikes you with that. Right. And so we would have people join us for mass, even if they weren't Catholic, just to be in their presence, in the presence of the friars. Or they would want to talk to them, you know, and share whatever of their life, or maybe, I don't know, you know, because normally when they would talk, I would just kind of like let them have that space and time. So it was really just kind of like a means of bringing more unity on the Camino. I mean, there's already so much unity on the Camino, but even more so with their witness, their physical witness of just these men that had dedicated their lives to God.
I think we're going to have to invite them one day and have the four of you, you know, do a round table here. And like, it will be amazing, because what was their story? Were they walking the whole Camino?
Yeah. So Father Conrad and Mark, who is the deacon, they started in St. John.
Okay.
Cedarport. And they, and then Brother John Bosco, they met up with him in Burgos.
Okay.
So, Brother John Bosco is really, he was the reason that they, all three of them, were able to walk, because in their community, after 12 years of being a friar, or 12 years after final vows, something like that, you can take like a long extended period of rest, or like a sabbatical. And he had, you know, had reached that point of when he could ask to go on sabbatical. And so for his sabbatical, he asked if he could walk the Camino.
That's amazing.
And he asked if Father could go with him. And then so when he asked Father, Father said, sure, I'll walk the Camino with you, but only if Mark can come. And so that was how Mark got brought into the equation. So the three of them, and it was shortly after Burgos that I met them, and walked all the way to Santiago de Compostela with them. It was so good. Other pilgrims joined our little family too, here or there, you know, they'd be, and I'm sure you experience this on the Camino, where you, some people are part of your life for a day or more, and then you never see them again, and then you see each other, you know, later.
There's like different groups. Some of them have people floating around, then one day you meet with one group, the other, and
So that's how it was with us. The four of us stayed together to the very end. But then others would join, you know, in and out, come in and out of our little Camino family, which is so great.
One of the main questions I ask everyone, how was the arrival to Santiago?
It's almost indescribable. You know, you just anticipate it so much. Mm-hmm. You know, it feels like at one point, it feels like you're never going to get there. Right? Because you're just, especially on the Meseta, it's just like, oh, this is never ending. But then the closer I got to Santiago, the more almost dread I had, because I didn't want it to end. I had reached this point of just so much joy, and that like a joy that I hadn't experienced in a long time, and a freedom that I hadn't experienced in a long time. And I didn't want to say goodbye to the three friends that I had made, you know, to the two fires and Mark. And it was right before Santiago, you know, where that you can see the cathedral in the distance, where those statues of the Monte pilgrims de pointing. It was there. I remember we stopped there and I lost it. I just started crying. I was so like overwhelmed that I had made it this far. First of all, you know, started in Lourdes. And I remember Mark saying at that moment, he said, "You've been walking a long time."
Totally.
Because I just couldn't stop crying. And I, you know, it was kind of one of those things, like I didn't even care that other pilgrims could see that I was emotional.
Yeah, when that moment comes, you don't care about anything.
Yeah, I was just so overwhelmed with like so much joy of this, like seeing the cathedral in the distance, but then like a sadness that I knew was coming to an end. And then as you're walking, you know, getting closer to the piazza, to the cathedral, just the pilgrims that are cheering you on, as you're walking, and then when you arrive, you know, the many people that are like people you've met them maybe, and they're hugging you, or people you've never met before, and they're just congratulating you, and it's like this incredible reunion of sorts, right? And I remember thinking, this is what heaven must be like when we finish our earthly pilgrimage, and it's like the
and
saints,
waiting
right?
There.
The saints
yeah,
that are
totally.
Like
never thought about it that way.
Have been
all
cheering
the people
you on.
That- been in your life, you know, prior to you and out there.
I said, like this has to be what heaven is like when you get there, of people that you may have met before, you may know, and then complete strangers, but everybody is so happy and so joyful and just ecstatic that you've arrived. So that was just so, you know, it's very nostalgic for me to even think about and talk about with you. And then to go to the tomb of St. James and to give thanks. At the time, they were the cathedral was under construction. So the inside was just fully, was all covered in scaffolding, but the thankfully the tomb was still open. So we could, you could go downstairs and, you know, venerate the tomb of St. James. And I just remember kneeling there and just being so, just a heart, my heart was so full of gratitude and just thanking him for helping me to arrive and for every person that I met along the way and just giving over all of like my intentions to him. It was a very beautiful moment for sure.
And did you plan ahead? Because, you know, we were talking before, you continue your walk this time without your family. Was that something that was planned? Something that you decided right there in the moment, or?
That was something I decided towards the end, like the closer we got to Santiago. I don't remember when exactly, but it was after Soria. It was towards the end when I thought I'd like to keep walking to Murcia and Finisterre. And Mark initially was going to possibly come with me, but he couldn't change his plane ticket. So I ended up going alone. And it was actually pretty depressing initially. From Santiago, you know, because there's this high of like you arrived in Santiago and then this like crushing like heartbreak of like saying goodbye. And then I remember like those first 2 days towards heading towards Finisterre, just like crying because again, I was all alone. But it was again like the sadness of like, oh my, like it's actually over. Like that part is over now. And like having to kind of, you know, again, like that trust of like just trust that the next, like, I don't need to know what the next thing is, but just to be here. But it was, that was a beautiful way to kind of decompress and process through the entire Camino. And then from, I went to Murcia first and then Finisterre. And Murcia, there was hardly anyone there, but there were some pilgrims who were kind of doing the same thing, just taking some rest. And it's a very sleepy town, you know, this tiny little fishing village. But it was a great way to kind of, you know, process through the Camino and what I had experienced. And I mean, I'm still processing the Camino, I think, even to this day, but to that initial, you know, sorting through the last however many days it was, 40 days of walking, and then to go to Finisterre was great also, you know.
Totally, I agree with you. I think, you know, the walking from Santiago onwards, whatever, if you go to Finisterre or Murcia, for the ones that have done a long walk, Absolutely mandatory, because you have so much stuff that if you stop in Santiago and go home, you don't have time to process it, and it's such a blocking and like going back to normal life after that, that is just...
I highly recommend it. Even if you don't have the time to walk, to take a bus there and just take some days of rest.
At least some days off,
And for me, it really, there's a scripture verse, I think in the Acts of the Apostles, you know, or in the letter of James, where he says, you know, and you will go to the ends of the earth. And for me, that was what Muxia was, to stand, you know, on those rocks as the waves are crashing.
Same, totally. For me, Muxia was the end. Yeah. The end and the beginning at the same time.
Mm-hmm. And to kind of like, okay, like life is only beginning for me. That's what it really felt like, was that life was really just beginning, you know, with this.
So I lost your audio.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, your thing is called auto battery. Probably. We've been talking for an hour.
I was saying the Camino is, you know, going to Santiago is kind of that, like, the end of the chapter of my religious life. And then to then begin, you know, to begin the next chapter, whatever God had in store for me next.
Yeah, that is amazing. Yeah. A lot of people will think, and you know, and a lot of times people ask us, you know, a woman walking by yourself, the Camino, in your case, an ex-nun with no experience in normal life, going all the way to Lourdes. And I'm like, you know, I bet a lot of girls are, well, where women asking their sons, like, is it safe? What would you recommend? What would you do different? But
I get that question a lot. You know, the safety question. I felt very safe the entire time. Mm-hmm. I would say you don't really need to do anything other than what you do in your normal life of just being aware of your surroundings. You know, it's not, if anything, I felt the Camino is probably safer than my day to day. I live in Washington, D.C. and my home is New York City, you know. So I would say this is even, the Camino is very safe. People are looking out for you. There are usually other pilgrims, you know, if you start from St. John, you start to encounter more pilgrims. And just the locals too were very helpful and welcoming towards pilgrims. So I would say it's very safe to do as a solo traveler. You don't need to worry at all. I actually really encourage when people are like, should I plan it? I'm like, no, just leave it up to Providence. Just leave it up to Providence, and like, you will end up where you need to end up that day, or go where you need to go. And but it was very, very safe.
I agree with you. And not, you know, not many people knew this, but I think it was by, you know, I think the Nat Geo Wild or one of these magazines, it was the safest place in the world to walk solo by a woman.
Yeah.
But, you know, during the summer, there was a couple of things that happened. And a while ago, there was even a bigger event. But as you were saying, for someone living in New York or living in Washington, if we compare the whole distance of the Camino with the amount of things that happened in the Camino, I don't think there is a safest place in the world to be.
Yeah, it was very safe. And even the albergues, you know, I'd never slept in the same room as men before. Or like, there are some albergues that the showers are both men.
Yeah, how was that for you? Like, that will be probably like suddenly going for your life all running with all women and younger women all around, suddenly to go in an albergue.
Yeah, initially I was like, oh no, you know, how is this going to work, or it's going to be weird or whatever. But again, like, people were very respectful of each other. I never felt like unsafe or like, you know, anything like that I wasn't comfortable with or whatever. Yeah, it was great.
That's amazing. Yeah. And I have a final question. You know, I always ask people what things the Camino give you, but in your case, I love something that I've read. What graces the Camino give you?
Oh, the Camino gave me so much, so many graces. The first thing to come to mind is freedom, really, to, you know, to be able to live in freedom, to not live in fear of what's to come, and to just really take each moment as a gift. And that, you know, you don't need to be doing big, great, extravagant things to have a fulfilled life, but to just do what's right in front of you. Like, you know, we've said the Camino is really nothing extraordinary. It's just a walk. And you could go on a hike anywhere, right? You can hike anywhere. But the Camino was to a tomb of a saint, first of all. But then just the graces of being able to live in the present moment and to be inspired by, for me, I was very much inspired by St. James, who was an apostle. And to know that he left everything to follow Christ. And because of his yes, like so many of us are now able to experience this incredible pilgrimage, right? Mm-hmm. But yeah, for me, it was really just a grace of freedom and to be able to live in freedom every day. And the, you know, they say the Camino continues to give even after you finish, totally. Even after you arrive in Santiago. And for me, that's really the last 2 years of my life. I can see how I've lived my life differently now because of the Camino, you know, to be more spontaneous with my time and myself, and to not be so afraid to step outside of my comfort zone. Yeah, for sure. That those are all graces of the Camino, I think.
That's amazing. Thank you so much. And, you know, I want to remind everyone that if they want to support us, they can go to elcaminopeople.com, buy me a coffee. And, you know, I'm a coffee lover, so I will take a coffee on you.
I like that mug.
Love it. You can get it on the store. I'm like, why don't people think that, you know, it's one of the things that I just made for fun. And the whole idea that we are not a non-profit is to all the fans to do projects. And there is something big coming that still I will tell you when we finish the interview. But my final question is always, what is going to be your next Camino?
When is my next Camino?
And which? Do you have a Camino plan? Do you know when or?
I this is something I think about probably every day.
I'm like, that's when you finish your first Camino. And after all these 2 years of weirdness, I'm like, we are all on that boat.
In many ways, I feel like the Camino calls you, right? The Camino.
I agree.
Calls you, and then when it's your time to walk it, you can walk it, you go. It somehow it happens, you know. Yeah. I would love to walk the Camino next summer, possibly, because it's the World Youth Day. Not next summer, I think it's 2023 is World Youth Day.
2022. Well, 2022 is going to be the World Youth in Portugal, and also the Pope is going to Santiago. Not sure for sure yet, but there's going to be a World Youth meeting in Santiago, and there was supposed to be the one in Portugal. I don't know if they switched it, but I know it was supposed to be at the same time with the Sacobeo.
Okay, well, so that's around the time I would like to go back, because I think I want to walk the Portuguese way, but starting in Lisbon.
Lisbon Lisbon from Porto, they told me it's not so pretty, but from Porto up, amazing. And if you do the coastal with the Variante Espiritual, incredible.
That's what I've heard. So maybe that, or the Camino del Norte is also
going on a more hiking experience.
Just because the mountain, it was, for me, that was the most beautiful parts were, you know, like the mountains from Lourdes to Saint-Jean was just so gorgeous. And so I heard that. Even up north more is like that.
Yes, it is incredible. It is beautiful.
Yeah, so we'll see. But I, like I said, I feel like the Camino is who calls. So whenever it wants me back, I'll be there. You know, in many ways, I'm like, because my first Camino is just such a beautiful, life-changing, profound experience, I'm like almost afraid to go back because I don't want to touch. You know what I mean? It's like I don't want to touch that experience. I almost kind of want to just leave it in that beautiful bubble that it's in. But I also know that that's not really what the Camino is. Like, it's supposed to only continue to expand. So we'll see. But maybe, God willing, next summer. And I'd like to go to Fatima. I went to Fatima after Finisterre and Muxia. So I'd like to go back. And
Amazing. Anyway, thank you so much. We hope to talk to you soon and maybe meet one day, hopefully on the Camino. And, you know, as we always say, buen camino.
Buen camino. Bye.